The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I had the Giants not making the playoffs. Right. I shouldn't have done that to you, because knowing the season that the Giants were about to have, you didn't need that. You didn't need that at the beginning of the year. And so that's my self-scout thyself.
Good.
Putting you in a bad mood before you needed to be put in a bad mood.
Oh, man. Well, if I'm not in a bad mood today, I'll never be, because the Giants suck with a capital S. That's right. We're here. It's Sunday. It's week 10. It's almost all in the books. We got Raiders Jets still going on. We know we got Monday Night Football, but it is I, Chris Sims, and Ahmed Farid, the man, the myth, the legend. We are here on a Sunday night to give you all the NFL Week 10 news.
It is I
don't know where I came up with that.
So I just heard a stat.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's true or not.
Right.
But going into this week, the NFL had like the largest margin of victory that it has had
in a long time. Right.
I think I heard that.
Yeah, that it was up there for sure. Right.
All right.
This
week, corrected some of that.
Yes, corrected tight games.
We needed it.
First time in what, I don't know, ever that there was five game-winning field goals as time expired?
I think we have a tweet on that.
Right?
This is all happening. We're getting into this way too fast.
Pretty amazing.
There were five game-winning field goals as time expired in the fourth quarter today.
Right.
The most in a single day in NFL history.
Yeah, and incredible. I mean, it was a lot of fun to watch. Those 1 o'clock games, you know, it was some unexpected finishes. It became crazy down the stretch. And, of course, we had a few at the 4 o'clock games as well. I mean, it was a good day. I don't know if we had any of those huge, unbelievable, marquee matchups, right? We had some good matchups, but we had a lot of good football games. You know, we're starting to get a better feel for some of these teams. And, you know, the NFL is still crazy, too, in Week 10. And it was fun, and we'll unpack it right now.
How you feeling, though?
I'm good.
You ready to go?
Yeah, I'm like.
I've noticed something that the crew seems a little like we're in mid-season right now, and this is when the doldrums can hit you.
I don't think it's the doldrums. I'm just getting like re-energized. I kind of got like done with halftime show for Sunday Night Football, and then kind of like, okay, slowly get dressed, right? And you kind of get relaxed for a minute.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you yawn and you're like, okay, I better wake my ass up and get going crazy again here. So I took some smelling salts.
Oh, you actually did that.
And I got the trainer to smack me in the face a few times. And now I'm ready to go and ready to talk ball, man.
I saw you on Football Night. Great job once again.
Thank you.
But at this point, you and CJ Stroud need to get a room.
Seriously, right?
It's like, okay. I mean, you're coming on a little strong at this point.
I know. The Texans highlights at one point today, I was like, I think I've done Stroud like 5 weeks in a row. I was like, you should probably give them to somebody else, right?
Yeah.
So Devin got to hit on it at the start of the show instead of me once again going, CJ Stroud. But I think everybody's seeing what we've been talking about for the last 6 or 7 weeks here, right? Now you're seeing wins. The stats are backing it up. But, you know, we've been here for 4 or 5 weeks at least of hearing me go, it's just unbelievable what we're seeing. And, of course, the lure of CJ Stroud even grows more today.
Let's start with that one.
Yeah,
so
okay.
We got the buzzer beaters here. We got a bunch of games. Let's start with that one. Texans defeat the Bengals. A little audible. We're going to do that second. But this is how, like, in the moment we are right now.
Yeah. Well,
Pete back there, Gabby, Morgan.
And you're a QB. You're the QB
of
this show. Sometimes you got to call
audible.
An audible. You got to check, kill. Right.
But then I heard today. You know what I heard today?
What did you hear today?
Reload. Does that mean don't? So we killed it. Reload it. Just do that other play again.
Exactly right.
Okay.
Very well. You're right. So sometimes you get the look on defense. You go can or kill.
Yeah.
Means kill the first play. But then, like, the defense is kind of disguising, and they go back to what you originally thought they might do.
Yeah.
And then you got to go reload, and everybody knows, okay, that goes back to the original play.
That's
Look at you listening, though.
I could be an NFL quarterback.
Damn, you could be. Only if they didn't ask you to throw or take a hit. Yeah. You'd be one.
Yeah, I would be a broken in, too. Texans defeat the Bengals. What a game. 30-27. I was just at Ohio State, too.
Yeah.
And Ryan Day was there. And, of course, C.J. Stroud was lighting it up at Ohio State, but not lighting it up to this extent. And Todd Blackledge asked Ryan Day, he goes, hey, are you surprised at all what you're seeing from CJ?
Yeah.
And he goes, no, not surprised. He's, you know, been, you know, quieting doubters for a long time. But I do wonder if a part of, like, Ryan Day, and they made it far last year, and they were a kick away from making it to the national championship game. But part of you is just like, man, he didn't look like that. He looked good. He didn't look like this his entire college career.
No, no, he did not. And I think we saw glimpses of it. I think if you unpack it like we did during, you know, the draft process, and you start to look at it, you start to go, damn, there are a lot of good throws, right? Yeah. You know, it's a lot of nice plays in the pocket. He puts the ball where he wants to all the time, and that continued today. I mean, it did. And they overcame. First off, they got out to a 20-10 lead, or 20-7, I should say, and it really probably should have been worse than that. That's where the game, and this is their resiliency, is amazing. You know, they get down there far on one drive. He fumbles a 4th-and-1 snap. Okay, mm-hmm. They got down there in field goal territory another time. He got strip sacked by Logan Wilson. Right, so they left some points on the board. It was one of those games at one point in the second quarter where you went, damn, they're going to go win at 10-7, and it feels at halftime, and you go, it felt like they totally outplayed Cincinnati. And it kind of gave you the feeling of, oh, well, in the second half, Cincinnati's going to wake up and watch out. But it was just the opposite. Since, you know, Texans came out and really kind of put the pressure on Cincinnati. For there, Cincinnati had to start opening up the offense, taking some chances there. Joe Burrow and company made a lot of big plays, definitely. Made some mistakes that we don't usually see him make. The interception in the end zone. Tyler Boyd with the drop touchdown pass at the end of the football game. Still, the shocking thing to me about the whole game is that, yes, 544 total yards of offense from the Texans on a Cincinnati Bengals defense that I think we all thought turned the corner and would be okay. And the Texans did whatever they wanted on them all day long. Pass game, run game, whatever they wanted. It was very impressive by them on the road.
Yeah, they're 5-4 now are the Houston Texans. They trail the Jacksonville Jaguars by one game in the AFC South. And both of us in the preseason were saying, there are a lot of teams in the AFC that can make the playoffs. The one team that probably can't is Houston. And now I'm saying they probably can.
We're in trouble on that one. I might be in freezing cold takes for that one right there. That could be happening. We make proclamations. That's what we do. I think we're seeing, one, when you have a special quarterback, you have a coach who's ready to be a head coach and understands how to, you know, lead a football team. And then the other thing is you see what free agency and draft can do for a football team. And I think Nick Caserio, I owe him an apology in saying that he did a little better in the draft than I thought, especially when it comes to players that fit in this scheme. Right. And that's whether we talk about Will Anderson, but Jonathan Greener, who we talked about. Mm-hmm. They get Sheldon Rankins in free agency. He's the perfect guy in the middle of this Seattle type defense to create havoc. So they got a lot of things going. And then, of course, on the offensive side of the ball, they're trying to run the 49er Shanahan offense. Right. Bobby Slowick. They got a very good offensive line. We saw it even without Damian Pierce. They had Devin Singletary had a huge day today, and they know how to get people open down the field. And then Stroud, it's like he's on a zip line with his ball to the receivers, no matter where they are. I know I've said all the superlatives about Stroud, but it's the throwing, it's decision-making, it's the wowness of the throws, it's the location of the high-difficulty throws, and then the nuance of, like we've talked about, oh, I'm getting blitzed, I know where my hot route is. Or I'm about to take a sack and I know where to throw it away so I don't get, you know, take a sack or get a grounding penalty. It's those things that are just above and beyond mature for a rookie quarterback.
Jason Garrett is all over your analysis that C.J. Stroud might be the best rookie quarterback we have ever seen. He was like, I laughed.
I know, I think because
it was one of those Sims moments. Like,
what I do. I know I make comments that are a little bold like that at times.
Yeah.
But I don't make them and just throw them out there. You know, I think I did it Like I told you last week, we were getting dressed for the show, and I was kind of going like, Have I ever seen a CJ, anybody have a rookie play like CJ Stroud?
Yeah.
Like, I was talking to myself. So then I came out in the pod and said it. I'm pretty good with football history and got a pretty good feel for that stuff. I know that there's some discussion there to be had, but damn, here in recent history, I don't remember anybody lighting up the yardage, the scoreboard, anything like that. The Houston, really impressive. I mean, one, I was shocked they ran the ball that way on Cincinnati's defense. Two, I was shocked that they're, you know, they gave Burrow and company a lot of problems for a while. It wasn't until, what, maybe late third quarter where you started to feel like, oh, Cincinnati finally got in a rhythm here and is starting to move the ball. But yeah, really good team win by the Houston Texans on the road.
James Lennox, 19, says, damn okay, C.J. Stroud. He outplays Joe Burrow and the Texans, move ahead of the Bengals in the playoff standings. Is C.J. a legit MVP candidate?
Yeah.
And are the Texans contenders?
He is.
I guess he is, you know? Right?
Yeah, he is. He's definitely.
Like, if anyone else was doing this, they would, like, if Joe Burrow was doing this, 470 yards.
No, I hear you. I think with the stats, when you talk about the cast of weapons around him at receiver, I don't think any of us are sitting here going like, oh my gosh, they're loaded. Look at all these guys, right? So I think when you take all that into account, how they're winning some of these football games, the comeback against the Bucks, the comeback against the Bengals, after he throws a pick six and you think, well, or almost a pick six, excuse me, where you think, oh man, that's going to be the end of this day, right?
Yeah.
Whooping the Steelers in Houston, right? You know, the things that'll go work against them, the early season, you know, lost two games. They had that dud in Carolina, right? But I think for him to be in the conversation, I think is more than fair. And what I said to you, I think last week, I certainly said it to Floria, like, this is he's gone beyond this is a good rookie quarterback. This has gone, like, to, whoa, is he one of the 10 best quarterbacks in football already? And I think it's fair to say that.
Despite all this, yeah. I think this is not a situation where it's a sky is falling game for the Cincinnati Bengals, because you mentioned it. You know, they did have some trouble, but the first drive of the game was like big play, touchdown. I was like, oh boy, this could be their day. It's going to be rocking there in Cincinnati, and they're going to have a fun day. And then they go 3-and-out on like four of their next five possessions.
It didn't seem like they did
crazy.
Anything.
But
right. Then
still, they made some plays at the end. Like you mentioned, the interception down to the 5-yard line.
Yep,
DJ Turner.
The bomb to Jamar Chase for
the
touchdown.
Right, offensive plays,
right.
Defensive plays with DJ Turner.
Knocking
one away.
It
was like, okay,
the 3-and-out,
they're getting the ball back. So
right. It's
like they were still there despite having their struggles.
Yeah, I am a little surprised, like I said, about the Bengals' defense. I was a little surprised it took them so long to kind of get going on the offensive side of the ball. Burrow did move around. He avoided some sacks where he certainly was in trouble, you know, a few times. But, I'm not panicked about the Bengals. I guess I'm still just a little surprised their defense has had some of these moments so many times this year. All the big plays. I thought they had righted the ship in that department, right? A few weeks ago, we were on here talking about they were leading the NFL in their defense as far as letting up explosive plays.
Yeah.
Run game and pass game was kind of way up there, right? Where they went on this little win streak and you felt like, okay, they're simmering that down a little bit, and today it struck again. And, you know, C.J. Stroud, his right arm, that offense, what they're doing there. And it honestly seemed like the Bengals had less, you know, feel for how D'Amico Ryans runs that 49ers defense there in Houston as compared to when the Bengals played the 49ers a few weeks ago.
Sure.
You know, they still got Steve Wilks maybe with the training wheels on, and they picked that apart there. But D'Amico Ryans, I'm sure, threw them some curveballs with some of the things they did on that side of the ball.
All right, I want to go on to the next game, but I have to do I have to do this.
One more thing.
It is time for Inside the Numbers, powered by AWS, and this is going to take a look at C.J. Stroud one last time, because he did something that we have not seen a whole lot of rookie quarterbacks do. Push the ball downfield in this victory against the Bengals. He averaged a career-high 11.9 air yards per attempt. He completed 11 of his 19 passes over 10 yards down the field for almost 259 yards.
That's insane.
5 of 7 on deep passes for 146 total yards. And so, I mean, that just reiterates the point that you have been making. These are the degree of difficulty throws for C.J. Stroud, amazing.
This isn't shovel pass or, you know, some freak receiver come around and I shovel it to you like right in front of you and I get passing yards even though you run for 60 yards, or screens out in the edge. They don't have that. You know, that's what we've been trying to wax poetically so much about this guy, right? You know, you've heard me. I've been making fun of it. It's not like it's dink and dunk and we're managing the guy. It's literally like, hey, we need you to throw flamethrowers and lasers all over the football field to some good receivers, not great receivers. And he just has continued to push the ball down the field with ease, be incredibly accurate, has great feel in the pocket, never takes stupid sacks. All of it is on the up and up. And he is, like, without a doubt, one of the best intermediate, like, 15-plus yard passes down the field quarterbacks in all of football. I mean, I would put him up there with the elite of the elite in that category. When you say, like, ooh, you need a 25-yard completion, right? I know we all think about Allen, Mahomes, Burrow, Justin Herbert. C.J. Stroud is up in that conversation for me now, without a doubt, right? He might have even surpassed Trevor Lawrence already here in that department. I know, and Trevor's the man. I know that. But I just can't get over, you know, the accuracy he has on these aggressive throws.
We might have to stop. They might have to issue a restraining order. This is getting a little creepy at this point. That was Inside the Numbers, powered by AWS on C.J. Stroud. It's just amazing. No one in football has thrown for more yards on throws of 10 or more yards
through
down
the air,
field,
right?
Through the air,
yeah.
Than C.J. Stroud.
Yeah, that's the thing. I know people have more yards per attempt than he does, but again, to me, that's all you've always heard me say. It's a little bit of a misleading stat. I think yards per completion is more. And then, you know, of course, you have to dive into that stuff because, you can get a 10-yard completion for throwing a screen 1 yard behind the line of scrimmage. And they give you, oh, that was 10 yards on that attempt, right? And he's not getting that. And that's where context does matter when you dive into the Texans and C.J. Stroud.
Chris could go on for hours and hours on C.J.
Stop
Stroud.
Stop it. Seriously, you're making me seem like a stalker. Stop talking about him. Move on with this already.
AWS wanted us to continue to talk about it, so we did that for them. Browns get a win, a comeback win over the Baltimore Ravens, 33-31. In this one, Dustin Hopkins with a game-winning 40-yard field goal with zeros on the clock. This game, I thought this was Baltimore's game from the beginning.
What?
Right? It was just a dang. They're going to do it again. It's like all these teams go into Baltimore that we think are pretty good, and they just get blown out. They get run, and it looked like even late in the game, right? Cleveland had to score the final 16 points after trailing 31-17 in the fourth quarter, but they came back, chipped away, made enough plays, and Baltimore messed up just enough.
Right.
Big win for the Browns.
I mean, Baltimore putting teams away is a little bit of a problem. I mean, it's the third, all three losses this year. I think they had the lead in the fourth quarter. Or blew a fourth-quarter lead. We saw it. It was an issue last year. Remember that? Remember last year they blew a big lead to Buffalo? They blew a big lead to the Miami Dolphins, right? That's kind of been a thing, and it's hard to put your finger on it. I don't think it's the same team as last year or anything like that, so I don't want to draw comparisons. It's just odd that it's that way. Like you said, complete domination of the game early on. I mean, to start the game, tip pass, interception, you know. Force a three and out or a punt from Cleveland, and then Keaton Mitchell with the huge run, right? We've been talking about him. So you're just going, wow, they got it, and they've been on fire, like you've said. You know, the Cleveland Browns put a few drives together in the first half, but you felt like, oh, when they got down there, you didn't feel like they could really score a touchdown. You felt like it was such hard work to even get in field goal range, right? And then, to me, the turning point was this a little bit. It's 17-6 Ravens, okay? They're lining up to kick a field goal, and here come the fucking Browns and making plays, okay? And they block the field goal, and they go and get a field goal before the half themselves, and instead of it going halftime 20-6, it ends up being 17-9, you know, and gives them a little life here to make it to a one-score game. So I thought, oh, okay. Now, the next drive, squash that, right? You know, you see, they throw the 40-yard slant to Odell Beckham Jr., and you go, oh, gosh, they're in trouble. But that was about it for the Ravens offense for the rest of the day right there, right?
Yeah, because there was another play that I was like, this is it. It's over. It was the muffed punt in the fourth quarter by Cleveland. Prochet muffs the punt.
Right.
And then Baltimore kind of stalls out. Their offense is not good, but Cleveland just kept defensive holding, and there we go.
It was seven plays I think, to get to 12 yards.
And that made it 31-17. I was like, now it's over.
Right. Now it's over. Right. And then they make some plays. Watson starts to hit some passes down the field, and Njoku, Elijah Moore, Amari Cooper. You know, Deshaun looked like he came alive and got more and more comfortable as this game went on. That was impressive. You know, but then, 31-24, tip pass, Newsom gets the interception, pick six, and it's like, holy crap, we're, you know, in a one-point football game because they missed the extra point, and it just, you know, was kind of amazing at that point. Cleveland, I can't say enough about Cleveland. I think I've told you, they give me 2015 Broncos vibes on the defensive side of the ball, where they just make a – even if you score and make a few plays on them, they're going to score and make some plays on you too. Just like, again, today. It's, yeah, they let up 31 points, but they blocked a field goal. You know, they had two interceptions on Lamar, right? One was a pick six. I'm trying to think, was there anything else? I guess that was it. There was only the two turnovers on the day, right? But, you know – they make plays on that side of the ball. And then if their offense could start making plays like we saw today, I know they're going to be able to run the ball. I know that. They got one of the best O-line coaches in football over the last 30 years. They got a really good O-line. Ford is a good running back, as we've seen. Kareem Hunt's a nice backup off of that. They got one of the best screen games in all of football. If they can just get Watson in the pass game going, not even to the – it's not like they got to be the greatest show on turf. Just, you know – top half of the league type of offense, and Watson makes a few plays with his arm and his legs a few times a game, they're going to be extremely tough to beat. Because as the game went on, it felt like Baltimore couldn't move the ball on Cleveland.
Yeah.
It felt like they couldn't block them, and it felt like I was sitting there, it just felt like Cleveland's D-line was in the backfield every play. And it's like once they got a kind of a feel for how they were being attacked and the Ravens got, you know, some of their game plan plays out of the system and put them on the film and the tablet and all that, they kind of go, okay, this is what they're doing to us today, and kind of shut them down from that point on.
Yeah.
And that's what's really impressive about them, how they can just put the clamps on you like that.
Browns' offensive run game opened up the pass game fourth quarter. Deshaun Watson was perfect, 7 of 7, 81 yards and a touchdown. On the flip side, Lamar Jackson in the fourth quarter, 1 of 5, 11 yards and threw the interception.
Right.
Eric DePasta is concerned because anytime the Ravens lost this season, they have completely beat themselves. The utilization of Keaton Mitchell today was sad. So he ended up with just 3 carries and 34 yards. I guess he caught one pass for 32 yards.
Right.
Explosive guy. Yeah, he's got a pass catch of 32 yards, a run of 39 yards, and that was about it.
Feed them the ball more. I mean, you know, I love Gus Edwards. He's a sledgehammer, right? But this is a guy that can go above and beyond a little bit. And like we talked about, I mean, go 60 yards to the house or, you know, get look like he's going to get a, you know, a 1 yard gain and he breaks an ankle and cuts back and all of a sudden he gets a 10 yard gain. I would certainly start to feature him more and more in this offense. But I think the thing that's concerning with the Ravens here, and we saw this a little last year, just the inability to maybe run the ball on Cleveland when they had the lead to chew up some clock and kind of, you know, shorten the game that way. And Cleveland, you know, it looked like kind of called their bluff, loaded the line of scrimmage, and they're tough that way because they got those corners on the outside where they can go and gamble and go, hey, you know what, we'll play one-on-one and put a bunch of guys in the box and blitz and just create chaos and see where it goes. And more times than not, they come out on top in those situations.
They had 31 points. They needed 3 more, but silver lining, it's their 4th straight game with 30 or more points, just the second time in team history they have done that. So.
It's like we said, it's not with offense. It's a little of everything. It's the defense setting them up, the offense being a little opportunistic, right? Special teams here and there. But Kevin Stefanski doing a really good job managing that offense. I'll give him credit there. And, you know, we know, like we said, I think they'll be able to continue to run the ball just on anybody. If they can get Watson to kind of look like he did today, and you could be a little scared of Cooper and Njoku and that crew there, man, Cleveland's got the type of talent that you go, they could beat anybody in football.
You thought that game had a whole lot of offense. How about in L.A.?
Oh, baby.
My Detroit Lions, they're different this year. Not the same old Lions.
They're not the same old
Lions. These are different Lions. 7-2 now. They get the last second field goal. Riley Patterson, 41-yarder with no time on the clock. 41-38 was the final score in this one. And as I was watching this game, I was like, man, Chris hates this game. He hates this game.
All this fourth down.
Every team going for fourth down. So
for
the Lions
it.
Went for it 5 times.
I know.
Got 4 of them.
Yeah.
The Chargers went for it 3 times. Got all 3 of them. And if those teams aren't aggressive in those situations, I do think the Lions lose. And I don't think the Chargers, if they're not aggressive in those situations, I think they lose by more than 3 points in this one.
I don't know if I saw them all, right? I did not. The early one that they missed, the Lions, I thought that was – it was like a long 4th-and-2 or 4th-and-3.
Yep.
And they could have kicked a field goal.
Yep.
That was the one I know I was complaining about the most. It was early on in the football game. I'm just like, take the points.
Yeah.
Keep the pressure up. I think they could have gone up 13-3 in that moment. Maybe I could be off.
In their defense,
yes,
it was one of the few times that they held the Chargers because they were down there at the 2-yard line.
And they made them punt.
They did make them
punt. And then they had the short field.
One of the two times they – one of the two times they punted in the game was that after that. I think that is the benefit that you get, right?
Definitely.
That
this is what Pete tells me 7 times a week when I go kick the field goal. And if the other team stops them, and then they end up getting, you know, then they make the stop and they get the ball in field position. Pete turns around to me and goes, see, that's why teams do it. That's why they do it.
Because the Lions did it again. So they failed on that 4th and short. And then the next time they got down there, they had 4th and short again. And they're like, are they just going to kick it this time? Because they're like, we got to get some points from somebody.
Right.
And Dan's like, no, we're going to go for it again. They did score the touchdown that time, kicked off, and so the Chargers had better field position, went right down the field and scored a touchdown.
It was a lot of fun to watch this football game. It was. I'm not always in love with 41-38 type of football games, but I had no problem with this. One, you know, I feel like there was a part of me that was a little expecting big plays in this football game. I think let's start with the Lions offense, right? Lions offense, you guys have everything. When your O-line's healthy, you're scary, right? And I think your O-line's as healthy as it's been since the start of week one.
Sure.
So you look at that, the two-headed monster at running back. Gibbs is becoming special, like special. Montgomery's really good, don't get me wrong. But Gibbs has another gear that when you see him, you go, ooh, who's that guy with the ball, right? I mean, it shows on TV watching him. So to run for 200 yards and then also throw for 333 yards, when the Lions can run the ball at all, they're almost impossible to defend because of the play-action pass and everything we talk about there. And then you can't rush the passer that way. And Goff, who's not great when he's under pressure, he's got a clean pocket, and he just tears you apart, right? And they got so many creative ways to do it. Amon-Ra St. Brown's damn good. Our man Laporta's kicking ass in the pass game, right? They got all that working. So that's impressive. The Chargers, their offense, you know, impressive again. I wasn't shocked to see them move the ball. Did I think they were going to score 38 points on your Lions team? No, I did not. But the thing I worry about with your Lions here as we go forward, we knew the Chargers' defense stinks. All right, we knew that. I worry about lack of maybe one more big-time playmaker, and you've heard me say the fact that they play zone so much, you know, with teams that have some good zone offenses and a quarterback that knows how to manipulate the zone coverages and has, you know, an arm like Justin Herbert, that's what worries me about Detroit. That does, right? You know, it's lack of ability to lock people down in man-to-man just a few times every drive that just changes it up or makes the quarterback make a throw, or where you can blitz and go, okay, you know, zone blitz is different. Sometimes you blitz and you go, yeah, I hope it gets there, but it usually leaves a big void in the zone because you have one less guy covering. You've blitzed, right? So those are the issues there, and that's the one thing I worry about them, you know, going into the future.
They've been searching for that difference maker.
I know.
Jeff Okuda, they hoped he was the guy.
Exactly right. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, they need him to get back and get healthy. That'll certainly help out, right? But that is the one thing. When I look, you got a lot of good on your Lions defense, but there's still, to me, only one blue-chip star. And that's probably different than, you know, the rest of the really good teams in football, right? Mm-hmm. It's Aiden Hutchinson. He's the man. There's a lot of good around him. I don't know if there's enough great for me to think their defense is ever going to be great this year.
Pete has supplied us with a perfect stat.
Yeah.
For the discussion that we're having right now, Keenan Allen, this is per Next Gen Stats, you know it's good.
Right.
Keenan Allen caught 7 of his 8 targets against zone coverage for 118 yards and 2 touchdowns en route to a team-leading 11 receptions, 175 yards.
We broke this down a few weeks ago with the Lions, right? Yeah. I think when they beat the Bucks, we talked about they don't want to play man, they want to play zone. Remember, we kind of did our deep dive into their defense.
Yep.
And that's what I worry about. Because we've talked about the Chargers. The Chargers have receivers that don't separate downfield, right? So if you have a team that can play man-to-man and dabble in that a little bit, like you saw with the Jets last week, who were starting to play more man-to-man against the Chargers, they couldn't get open. Nobody can separate. But with this matchup, it fit them. You guys play zone. They understand where to sit. Keenan Allen's a great route runner. He knows how to manipulate the zone, find the holes, do all those type of things. So that's where it makes sense. That Chargers defense stinks. We know that. It's going to have to be Justin Herbert and the offense carrying the squad all year long. I don't think he can do that. I think they stay respectable here and are in the playoff mix, but I don't think they're a playoff football team. Lions, you guys are damn good. You just that's the one thing that worries me when you play the cream of the crop offenses is your defense in that secondary a little bit.
For the Chargers, this is their fourth loss this season by 3 points or fewer. That is the most in the NFL, and I feel like they've been up there and led that category maybe perhaps the last five or six or seven years.
Right?
It's been the Lions or the Chargers. I feel like they've both been kind of in these games where they always find a way to lose them.
Yeah.
This time it was the Chargers in this one. Seahawks in
around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Commanders, a 3-point game. Jason Myers, congratulations. You're the game winner, the 43-yarder with no time on the clock. Seahawks getting the win here. It is their longest home winning streak. They've won four in a row now since 2020. They're starting to roll there, that home field advantage in Seattle. I like it when that place is rocking. Geno Smith maybe getting going a little bit late in the game. First game with two touchdowns and no interceptions since week two. So I don't have a real great feel on this game, but I guess it's one of those – where both teams got rolling late, and Seattle just did a little bit more.
Defensive struggle, football game. Seattle, a little bit like we've talked about, moving the ball between the 30s, but as soon as they get in their red zone or anything like that, they can't make a play to get it to the one-yard line or get in the end zone, right? Seattle, you know my thoughts on Seattle. I love their talent. I don't think their O-line's great, and I don't love their scheme altogether. They're a little bit like you've heard me say about them. I think I even said it before we started the pod. It's just that I don't know what they're trying to accomplish on the offensive side of the ball sometimes. It's just like, hey, we're in shotgun four plays in a row, and we threw it. And now it's the next drive, and we're underneath the center, and we're going to play smash mouth. And then I'm like, okay, that's cool, but now where are we going to tie it all together here? What are we trying to accomplish? What are we actually trying to expose or set up for later in the football game? And I never have a feel for that with Seattle. I think that's what bothers me about it. I've been trying to put my finger on it for the last few weeks, and I think that's what it is. But as we've talked about, they have some big-time playmakers on the offensive side of the ball. You know, and Geno had some time to throw the ball as the game went on. And, yeah, they started to dice them up in the pass game, you know, in the late third, fourth quarter. We were sitting there at a 12-9 field goal fest halfway through the third quarter, right? Then it becomes the short pass to Kenneth Walker. He breaks it down the sidelines for a 64-yard touchdown pass to make it 16-12. And then the game kind of opened up. Right, and that's where it went from there. And Sam Howell and that offense—they made some big plays in the past game.
As they do every week,
they're fun to watch. Right, they're certainly not shy. They're going to go for it. They are. Defense is not great. They can't run the ball that great against anybody. And what was I going to say? And they don't protect as good as you would like to. So those are their issues. Valiant effort by them. I do want to give them a lot of credit for their effort on the road after trading away all these guys. They're still fighting. But, Seattle just out-dueled them, has more playmakers than they do right now.
Kenneth Walker is such an enigma to me.
I know.
Because it seems like he is such a big play threat.
Yeah.
But then in the run game, you look at him, it's 3.3 yards per carry. Just didn't really rip off one. I think he had one run of 13 yards. But then he has that huge play in the pass game. It's just like, it seems like he would do that more consistently. But I guess it's just a whole offensive flow.
I think that's really what it is. I don't think they're, you know, a consistent, good running football team. You know, I don't ever look at it. Like, I could certainly maybe question his vision a little. His ability is top-notch.
Yeah.
It is. You know, I think what's weird at times is he comes out of the game. He can be a little bit of a look for the home run, right? Sometimes where you just go, hey, the hole was there. Run through it a million miles per hour and get 8 yards instead of, like, getting up there and going, ooh, if I bounce this here, I could get around the edge for 40, right? And it's just like, oh, now you got one. And we should have got more. There's a little of that, and that's where Charbonnet is a nice effect because Charbonnet just comes downhill. He's a straight liner that way, mm-hmm. right? I also think when Charbonnet gets in the game, defenses are usually a little less scared because Walker is the kind of guy, when I talk to other teams, they're always like, ooh, you know, Walker, he can score from anywhere. He's one of those guys that they got to be worried about in that department a little bit. So I feel like the defense is – you know, foot comes off the gas pedal. But nice game by Sam Howell. Hopefully this game gets Geno Smith and the Seahawks back on track. And even, you know, their defense. Seattle, I almost feel the same way, their offense and their defense. Just not quite, to me, performing to the actual players and ability they have on the field quite yet. We'll see. Maybe that's the best is yet to come from them.
Boye Mafe did get his seventh straight game with a sack, setting the franchise record.
Yeah. Boye is, I mean, they got a lot. They're another team, a lot of good. They got blue chippers in the secondary. Who are the blue chippers in the front seven that are going to start to take over for them? I think that's the thing I want to see, right? A lot of good there, but they kind of do it by platooning in different guys, fresh bodies, scheme, not necessarily guys that take over just with single individual efforts on the defensive side of the ball.
6-3 right now. Good season. Good start to the season for Seattle Seahawks, all told. One more buzzer beater. The Arizona Cardinals beat the Falcons 25-23. Matt Prater, your old teammate.
Yeah.
23-yard field goal. That's nothing for him.
Oh,
he's
nothing.
Like, I can get a
63. He's 60, 61, 62, 100%. 63. I think he's hit a 64 in his career, right?
He was almost insulted by this. He was like, you're really going to trot me out there for a 20? I don't do 23-yard field goals. All right, fine. It's a game winner. I'll do it. Kyler Murray is back. And I think we should start with the dots.
Yeah.
Pete, we have the dots. If
you're
watching
that play,
Peacock or
that
YouTube,
play, right?
We got to do the dots play. So this one is the 13-yard scramble where he goes back. This is what, 3rd and 10?
3rd and 10.
End of the game, under the 2-minute mark, need this play. He goes back to the 20-yard line and then goes forward. He has to run 20 yards just to get back to the line of scrimmage and then goes another 13 for the first down.
Incredible. I can't say enough about Kyler Murray and the way he looked today during the game. To come and play football, first off, run the way he ran. He looked, you know, I'm not going to say he looked as fast as he did before the ACL, but still was like, okay, he's still one of the fastest quarterbacks in football, that's for sure, right? You know, shifty, controlled the ball. I couldn't, you know, I thought really for the most part of the day, he put the ball where he wanted to. It looked like it was nice spirals. He was spinning it. You know, all of that. Had a big drop at one point on a third down where they ended up having to punt the ball or maybe kick a long field goal, if I can't remember it correctly. But, yeah, to come in and just be that way, you know, he's going to put pressure on them there. What are they going to do? You know, they can run the ball a little bit. They're creative. Their personnel fits him as a quarterback. It does. You know, they've been able to run the ball all year long, and now you got the ability to run him too off of that. It's only going to make the holes bigger for James Conner, let alone Rondale Moore and Hollywood Brown. They seem like jitterbug receivers, wide open fields, spread the ball, Kyler Murray style. It seems like it fits them. And they got a fucking tight end in this, Trey McBride, who is really starting to pop as of late on a week-to-week basis, and he had a huge day today, and none bigger than that big catch at the end that set up the game-winning field goal.
Yeah, 33-yarder at the end. Yeah, he ended up with 8 catches and 131 yards, so certainly a connection there. You're right, Kyler Murray. And by the way, on that play, he ran 68 yards.
That's crazy.
On that 13-yard scramble. He reached a top speed of over 20 miles an
hour.
Wow. That's his fastest since 2021.
Wow.
So he was booking it out there. And they have a little nugget here. The win probability added after that play was 22%. So the Cardinals had a 22% chance, a better chance of winning after that one play.
That first
which
down.
I would venture a guess when he was back at the 20,
right.
If you could do in-play win probability.
Yeah, he's down to 0.5%.
Exactly.
They're going to lose this game. It's almost a lock.
He is so fun to watch.
Yeah, he is.
I kind of forgot a little bit. Right? You forget.
Yeah, right.
You're just like, okay, yeah, he's good. He's a mobile quarterback. You know, he makes some mistakes with the arm. He tries to do too much.
Right?
He is a one-of-one quarterback.
He's special gifts. That's why I don't think it's as easy as just being like, oh, he's small, so we're going to get another quarterback in here. We're going to draft somebody else, right? I just don't think it's going to be that easy. And I think that's why they gotta play him and see what he can offer here and see what he's capable of and see if they – okay, do we believe in him and that we can build this thing the way we want to build it around him? And, yeah, I'm going to be interested to see where it goes. We've said it all year. With Dobbs and that, we kept going. They're very creative in offense. They do a lot of good things. Dobbs would miss a few throws every game, and you'd go, oh, man, if he just hit this or that or could just make one play, they might have won, you know, a few more of those games. And I know we'll get to Dobbs in a minute. But, yeah, Murray's got special, special instincts and knows how to play and has just got big-time skills.
Yeah.
Now, the other side of the ball, the Falcons, right? I mean, we're having the same conversation here. You know, I don't give a shit what it is. It's 2023, right? To come away against – you played the Cardinals. It's, you know, a defense that's better than its ranking but nothing special. And to throw the ball for 70 fucking yards, are you kidding me? In 2023 against the Cardinals, 70 yards?
And neither of your quarterbacks are named Tommy DeVito. I mean, that's the crazy thing about it.
No, it's – you know, they ran the ball good. Bijan did look good. There's no doubt about that. So that was nice to see. But a little bit like we talk about with the Chargers, right? Who can get open one-on-one on the Falcons and make plays?
So when you when you scouted Drake London in college, you said he can't separate.
He can't separate.
50-50 balls he's good at.
Great at. He's great at that. He's a good route runner. If you want to throw him slants or little short intermediate passes, fine. That's what he's good at. But if you think you're going to line him up and you go, oh, he's got one-on-one and he's going to dust somebody and just be, see you later, I'm going to run for a bomb, or see you later, I'm going to run for a 20-yard in-cut and be wide open, that is not going to happen, right? And then Kyle Pitts the same way. Yeah, he's extremely talented for a tight end, but – you know, you got to be able to run the ball and then create some plays off of play action and stuff to where he's matched up against linebackers and safeties, not split out with a corner covering him or anything there. So, to me, that's one of their big problems is lack of firepower at wide receiver, and that's affected their quarterbacks on, you know, whether it's Heinicke or Ridder. Nothing's been easy for them.
I give him credit for battling, though.
Yeah.
And they battled, and Heinicke got hurt, and then Ridder came in and made a couple of plays.
He did.
I will give him some credit that they were in this game.
Right.
And they ran the ball for almost 200 yards.
Yep.
So that kind of makes you just flip those numbers around and be like, hey, they almost threw for 200 yards passing and ran for about 100. That's not bad. Just a different way of doing it.
Yeah, Ridder did some good things, too. Threw a ball down the field, got a big PI call, you know, had the read option run for a touchdown at the end of the football game that gave him the lead. There's not enough offense there in Atlanta. Not enough that scares you other than, wait, their O-line and their run game. And, you know, even with that, like, yeah, it was almost 200 yards rushing, but a good chunk of that is Ridder scramble and Heinicke scramble, too, to where, you know, again, it's good, but I guess I'm just not as blown away by it as I thought I would be.
Yep. All right, closes the book on all the buzzer beaters. That was crazy.
Yeah,
a lot of great games.
Really is. It's shocking. I don't know why, like, five buzzer beaters seems like a lot, but I would have thought we'd had a Sunday throughout history that would have had more than five buzzer beaters.
But, I mean, these were all with, like, zeros on the clock. That's so rare. It's like, usually it's like, all right, you got to kick off or something like that. Nope, 0-0-0. Well done. All right, time to go into the shop, the printing press. Give me the headlines presented by Hyundai. Let me find it in the rundown here. Hold on. I started scrolling prematurely. We're at it. 49ers beat the Jaguars 34-3. This was not a buzzer beater at any point.
No.
This was the 49ers saying, we are angry that we had a three-game losing streak.
That's right.
We never should have had that three-game losing
streak.
And we're going to take it out on the Jacksonville Jaguars.
That's right.
Your headline for this game is?
The Young and they're rested.
Oh, nice.
Oh, I got it. You got it, Chase Young.
Like
they
it.
Were rested off the bye week. You got it? Good,
it's
good,
perfect.
Good. I just want to make sure everybody's up to speed.
And that
with
was
us.
All you, right? That
it was
all...
not all me. I actually said the young and the restless, and then the cackler came in and said, how about the young and the rested? And it all worked out. So it was a good effort by me and Pete.
We give you the credit. And in the process, we make fun of
you.
Right.
So that's how it works,
it's
right?
Like, yeah, he passes on the credit. He goes, keep up my name out of your mouth. The 49ers, man. This is the team that we were like, what happened to this team? Well, here they were.
I just, you know, Shanahan, first off, smart, Right, they're going to go back to the lab in a week off and reevaluate what they need to do, what needs to be tweaked, what needs to be changed, whatever. He's going to get Steve Wilks on his frame of mind thinking situations. And then the big thing, I think, is the health, right? The health was huge. McCaffrey totally 100% healthy. Debo back in the lineup. Trent Williams playing, right? You know, none of that. And then you add Chase Young. And you know, there's some other guys that were banged up on the defensive side of the ball that just get to come back and be totally, totally, you know, 100% fresh, healthy, and crazy mofos like they are. Yeah, that's what jumped out to me. I think the big thing with the 49ers is, you know, one, well, oh, man, Zach Wilson just threw a pick. He had a great drive here. The Raiders are going to end up winning this one 16-12. Made a lot of nice throws, just threw a pick to Spillane. They're going to lose. Jets are going to lose.
Mm.
Okay. So, but going back to the 49ers there, all right, let me say with some of the things on the offense. When Shanahan has the full cast of characters healthy, Kittle healthy, Ayuk, Debo, McCaffrey, he's almost unstoppable. Because like we talk about with some of the offenses that bother us that don't tie things together, that's where Shanahan's brilliant. It's like, hey, we got to toss to McCaffrey. Hey, we got to toss to McCaffrey. But it's also about setting something else up off of it. Oh, here's the fake toss to McCaffrey. There goes Debo on the reverse. Touchdown, Debo, right? There's always something to it there. And he's so good at playing his stars off of each other. That's what I love about Shanahan more than anything. So he gets that going, right? A motivated group like you're talking about, O-line healthy, Purdy, chip on his shoulder. You know, people telling me I'm Brady, and now they're telling me I should be benched, which was wrong. He played great. And then I think when you add on the defensive side of the stuff, here's to me where it jumped out right away. Matt Casey, producer of Football Night in America, he's sitting here behind us. When the game started, I went, Niners just came out with 5D linemen. They just came out in 5D linemen and said, the hell with our coverage. You're not going to have enough time to get anybody open down the field. We're going to smother you right here. And that's how this game's going to be. And to me, that was the big thing I looked at. We know those guys up front are awesome for them, right? But I felt like there was some different alignments, like you've heard me talk about with the 49ers up front, just to give their guys a little schematical advantages. You know, just not to be like, hey, it's a 4-2 cover 4, and we're just lining up in it, hello. You know, there was plays where I was like, wait, 3 D linemen are over here, Fred Warner's over here, with 1 D lineman, who's blitzing, who's coming, how are they going to do this? Oh, they're doing a stunt off it. I felt like they gave some different looks up front that stressed Jacksonville out in a big way and never let Jacksonville get into a rhythm.
Yeah.
And then they got behind, and then we know what we talk about. Once you get behind in the 49ers, good fucking luck with that crew and those pass rushers guys and all them teeing off on you.
Yeah, I feel like this is – let's put it in almost pen at this point. We have to look at the 49ers for Wednesday. Don't you think so? Don't we? Like,
yeah.
With Young in there.
With that kind of
part of your
performance
Young and the
altogether,
rest of,
yeah.
Yeah, like how does he change?
Yeah.
Like what his abilities are.
And I think we'll get
are.
Into see what Wilkes tweaked with on the defensive
so
side,
what
right?
What about Wilkes? And I think we have a question from a homie here. B-ball Daniel 1, damn okay, Niners D. What adjustments did Steve Wilkes make that paid off for the Jags? Maybe
yeah.
some more film review will have to be done before he can give a definitive answer on
yep.
that. But I do know this.
Yep.
He was in the booth, then he went to the field.
Hey,
so,
there's something to that.
Is there something like what? Like Matt Canada, we'll talk about the Steelers
yeah.
here in a bit. He went booth to field,
well,
right?
Do you spend the whole week calling defenses from the field on
okay.
the practice field, right?
Yeah.
You get trained to, like, I can see the field the right way, right? It's not perfect where you can see everything and every little alignment. But what you do get on the field is, you know, leadership from guys, get to get in their ear a little bit, encouragement, or like, what the hell are you doing, right? Or, hey, and then, you know, I think it's getting you get a little better feel for the flow of the game in person, right? Where you could be up in the booth going, hey, our D-line's, you know, we're playing okay. And then you get on the field and you go, oh, actually, we're kind of being pushed around. I guess I was giving our D-line a little more credit than it should be. It does give you a different perspective that way,
yeah.
you know, let alone to have the defensive coach, you know, all the defensive linemen sitting there. Oh, now he's coming over and checking you. And, hey, we want to do this. And let me show you this picture and all that. You know, he's the best coach on the defensive side of the ball. So now the message
yeah.
is coming straight from him, straight to the players. I think there is some beauty in that.
I would think the flip side of it, too. Like, for the players, like, having him accessible to run things by or say, hey, man, this is not working. We need to do this, right? It kind of gives the players more of a voice. And it feels like they have – more accessibility.
I think there is that. And you're seeing it firsthand to go along with that instead of maybe relying on other coaches to tell you, oh, they're doing this to us. We need to over-adjust. And when you're on the field, you know, you might panic up in the box. You go, that sounds like we're a little panicked down there. Like, we need to adjust to this. Let me adjust. Let me change this, right? Where you're on the field, you're like, hey, we're okay. We're okay. Yeah, they're pros too. They made a play. We don't have to totally reorganize the game plan here because they made one 20-yard completion, right? So I think that's all of that happens at some points there. But yeah. The one thing I wrote down, and to answer our listeners, you know, question there, is the 49ers D being more creative on the D line, right? It jumped out to me from the get-go, and when the game was 10-0, I wrote it again. Because I just saw some alignments where I went, they haven't done this or they haven't aligned like this all year long, whether it was the five-man fronts or, you know, three guys to one side, a linebacker and another defensive lineman to the left side. They just did some things there that I'm sure toyed with Jaguars' rules, right? And they didn't know how to protect it, how to block it in the run game. Oh, wait, this guy dropped out. What coverage are they doing? Trevor Lawrence never looked comfortable throughout the day. Totally harassed. Jacksonville... this will serve them well, I will, because they're going to learn, you know, a little bit like, oh, this is Super Bowl team intensity. We're still a young team. We've seen it here and there. You know, we've talked about that. But they got a feel today for a team that knows how to rev it up as bad as anybody in football.
Yeah.
And those are the type of teams you're going to play as you get in later in the season, whether it's the Chiefs on the road, the Ravens, whoever, right, where you're going to go, no, our level of intensity, you know, detail, all that has to go up here if we're going to beat these type of football teams.
Yeah, it was like Doug Peterson's like, what happened there? And then Trevor Lawrence is like, don't worry, we got it, second half. Like the Chargers game, like, no, the game's
yeah,
over.
Yeah, yeah, this ain't the Chargers. This is the 49ers.
The game is done. Yeah, right. Don't try to pull a Chargers on this one. Brock Purdy, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. And that one pass to Kittle was awesome. Like he double pumped, he brought it back, and then he had everyone in his face. He didn't even follow through on that.
No, he had kind of just, it was perfect placement. You know, I love that call. Second and inches, you know, defenses always overplay it. You're going to get optimal, perfect passing looks. He wants to throw, I think it was the Ayuk over the middle.
Okay.
It wasn't there. So there he is, tries to re-cock it with somebody in his face and puts a ball right on the money to Kittle up the sideline and made things interesting. So, yeah, big play by him. Purdy, big bounce back. 49ers, big bounce back.
Cowboys get a big win over the Giants. We put this in the printing press, too, just so you can put it to bed. You're right. Write the headline, write the story, and then ship it out and don't think about it ever again for you. 49-17 is the final score. Your headline for this game is?
Gosh, I could be dirty. I could say so many things, but I'll say home sweet home because Dallas is damn good at home. They're a different team in that stadium, on the field turf. They're fast as hell, and it showed today.
Longest home win streak. Since 1979 and 81, they've won 12 in a row now at home, dating back to last year.
That's
something.
It is something. You know, they're a team that's built for that surface for sure. They're a speed team, not a size team, like we talk about. And when you have that, the field turf is, you know, definitely better than running on grass that way. I think it's the second week in a row we can look at it and go, you know, listen, we knew their defense was going to dominate. There's nothing to break down there. I mean, shit, I think you and me could have gone out there and played defense and held the Giants to maybe, you know, 20 points.
Definitely.
You know, somewhere. They'd have to hide us and game plan around us a little bit. Yeah. But we could have figured it out. I mean, they had no chance. But I think run game,
I
Cowboys.
Mean, look at that.
I know.
640 total yards to 172. What was Morgan saying? Morgan was saying it was the largest disparity
in yards.
In yards and...
I don't know, Giants NFL. History.
Probably. Something like that.
Something like that.
That was the stat. It was like, it's got to be. That was it. They didn't know for sure, but they, since 1979.
When the year dad was drafted.
Yeah, right. That's when they start all stats. They go, when was Chris's dad drafted? Okay, 79, we'll start our stats there. But that's insane. You just don't see that. Obviously, the Giants are in shambles. They've had injuries, but you just don't see that.
No, it's a disaster, right? The one thing I'll say with the Cowboys... You know, I like the way Dowdle looks at running back.
Oh, yeah.
Right? He runs hard. I think they might find something there. Him with a great little combination with Pollard. And then I think the other thing for the second week in a row, and I give Mike McCarthy a lot of credit, is he's breaking out of his mold of like the shortest passing team in football the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season. And here we are 2 weeks in a row where it's like, you know, screw the 5-yard slant. We're going to look for the 50-yard post. We're going to look for the 30-yard crossing route. And I feel like it's opened up the field for them, right? And it, as we've talked about it before, and you've heard me say this a million times, you know, all these coaches that think, oh, I'm going to make it easier on the quarterback and throw the ball 4 and 5 yards, it's not easier. It's easier to read the field and see the field when things are spread out and people are down the field and creating separation. And Dak Prescott is great at hanging in the pocket and pushing the ball down the field. He has statistically been one of the best down the field throwers of the football the last 4, 5, 6 years of his career. So that's where, you know, I like to see that change from them, and I think it makes them a much more dangerous offense altogether.
They almost threw a Hail Mary
and almost caught it.
I didn't think he'd be able to get it down there.
His arm's special, right? He was running to the left almost out of bounds and threw the ball 60 yards and gave his guys a chance. But Raiders.
We'll let this one decompress. Yeah. We'll get to that one here in just a bit. So the Raiders get the win. Robert Saleh doing a bro hug. Robert Saleh, by the way, the beard is much darker. I think it's a much darker beard this week than it was last week.
Yeah, it does seem a little darker than last week. I don't know if that grew in more, if we're dying it. I don't think he would dye it. I don't know. Maybe he would. We'll see. I don't know.
We'll ask him.
I'm sure.
This is from across the bedroom.
Yeah.
He says, damn okay, my king Dak Prescott. Lighting it up on the field, throwing for 1,000-plus yards in the last three games. My question, if Dak keeps playing like this, does he enter your top 10 quarterbacks again? Big fan of the podcast. Keep it up. So I just checked
thanks.
It.
Yeah.
He was 13th.
Last year was, I think, the first time he dropped out of the top 10 in a long time, right?
Can he win you back?
Definitely. Yeah, I think last year, you know, like we talked about, it was some of his worst play was in big moments, right? The turnovers were ridiculous last year. And he missed some plays and throws in the pass game last year, let alone I didn't think he made as many plays off schedule. But the way it looks right now and the way he's been playing here as of late, yeah, he certainly can get back into my top 10. I have so much respect for Dak Prescott, right? It's not always perfect, but toughness, leader, never blinks, doesn't let Jerry Jones or the Cowboys fan base and all that ever get him down. He just keeps staying the course. And that's why he's the perfect quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah.
And that's why I root for him, because he does and handles himself the way an NFL quarterback should handle themselves.
Yeah. Eat soup. That seems pretty cool. That's a cool thing to do, right?
It is. I love soup.
Not a lot of people.
I'm like a soup every day kind of guy.
Soup guy.
I am.
Every day?
Every day.
It seems
excessive. I know.
It's
do you eat a sandwich every day?
I don't.
Oh,
no.
You don't? Damn. What do you have for lunch every day?
Hard-boiled eggs.
Okay.
Protein
Ew.
And fiber.
Yeah. Hard-boiled egg for lunch?
It's very healthy.
Damn,
amino acids
I know.
In there.
Damn, yeah. I don't want to be that healthy.
Soup is high in sodium. You got to watch out. You got to be careful on that.
Yeah, I'm a low in sodium naturally guy, so it helps me out.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is. It is. Yeah. But I do. I'm not even joking. A soup a day.
Soup a day. Yeah. For lunch?
Most of the time, right. That's like the one meal my wife doesn't make for me, so I have to make it, so it's already made, and I just have to heat it up.
What do you do, in a pot, or do you
put
it in the
like
microwave?
Yeah, like Whole Foods has those pre-made, like chicken and rice soup.
Yep.
They have a minestrone. They got a chicken tortilla. You know, so I dabble in all those. I kill them. I really do.
Wow.
Normal chicken noodle.
If you haven't had it for lunch, maybe for dinner, or maybe in between lunch and dinner.
Sometimes I do both.
Wow.
Sometimes my wife's like, what do you want? And I'm like, well, I've had two soups already, but I'll have a third, like, because I want to make it easier on her.
Yeah.
I don't care. It's fulfilling.
I've known you for 4 years.
You didn't know
that?
I know. You're intrigued, right? You're like, the hell with the rest of the podcast. I want to ask you more about this.
We could talk about this for another 5 to 10 minutes. That was Give Me the Headlines presented by Hyundai. Pete says we have to go, though. So we have to.
Sorry, Hyundai. We ruined that segment by talking about my soup. Blame Ahmed.
Giants have the number 2 overall pick, by the way, right now. If the season were to end right now. So Pete's going to just slide that in every time.
Oh, I know.
Something positive.
They're in the Caleb Williams, Drake May sweepstakes, as everybody is starting to say up here in New York.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble.
Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Do you want to do Sunday Night Football real quick? Is there anything else to say about it?
Well,
let's do it.
Yeah, okay, let's do it.
Jets lose to the Raiders. Final score, 16-12. Well done in the back. The graphic is up on the screen. Now just we need Chris's thoughts.
Well, it's one of those games where it felt like the Jets controlled the football game, right? And they kind of let the Raiders hang around, and there we are at a 9-9 football game, okay? And then Josh Jacobs breaks a big run. Aiden O'Connell throws a jump ball to Michael Mayer for a touchdown. And that put it up 16-9 in a game where, I don't know, you know, we didn't know if the Jets could go down and actually score a touchdown, which they couldn't. They moved the ball a lot throughout the night. Zach Wilson made some very good throws throughout the night. Breece Hall certainly had some moments of popping here and there. Garrett Wilson played well. But just every time the Jets get down to field goal range or, ooh, they're about to make a move to get in the red zone to get into, you know, touchdown range there, it's always a fuck-up. It's always some sort of problem, penalty, whatever it is. They get sacked, whatever, and that put them behind the eight ball. This is one that's going to hurt them. They felt like they were the better team on the field tonight, at least in my opinion. You know, and again, I know I was sitting here talking to you for the last quarter or so, but I still was keeping an eye on things there. This, to me, feels like one that got away from them a little bit.
Jets are 4-4 now. Raiders are 4-5. I feel like they're going to be right in that area, both of those teams.
Yeah.
For the next few weeks here. Yeah, they're in, like, the bubble of the playoff conversation.
I'm amazed with the Raiders a little bit. I mean, to do this after Josh McDaniels get fired, you know, now they're going to be sitting here, what, at 5-5?
Yeah.
Right?
Did they really need that big of a culture change there? I mean,
it sounds like it.
That's crazy.
You know? I know. I don't like to say it. You know, I like Josh McDaniels a lot. But I haven't heard one guy act like they were sorry to see Josh McDaniel leave yet. I mean, in fact, it almost is like the opposite. Like they were having a party as soon as he got fired.
Yeah. Jets are 4-5 now.
Yeah, Jets
Raiders
are 4-5. Yeah, right.
NFL Jesus had not updated yet. That's
I
not know. On me.
Well,
that's
I got
NFL
it.
Jesus.
I said Raiders 5-5.
Oh,
I had updated it myself.
And then I went
was there.
Back. Oh, sorry.
I was there.
We'll edit that out. And Robert Spillane is being talked to on the field right now by Melissa Stark.
Wilson threw a bad interception late in the football game. As they were driving, they were down in field goal range. Spillane got it. That was really his big, you know, miss of the night. But overall, Zach Wilson did a lot of good things. I mean, led the team in rushing by far. Made a lot of big plays in the pass game. Garrett Wilson got going. This one to me a little bit too is just like, you know, it's defensive struggle type of football game. I know the offense needs more, but, you know, Jets living up that touchdown drive, to me, is the difference in the football game. I just didn't think the Raiders would actually go down and punch one in the end zone on this Jets defense. That's where I was shocked.
All right, Zach Wilson made a few plays.
Yeah.
But he's no Joshua Dobbs. As we go into the don't look now category, teams that, I don't know, you look at their record, you look where they are right now, you go, don't look now, but they're streaking. The Minnesota Vikings are one such team. They defeat the Saints 27-19. Now they're 6-4. They got the longest active win streak in the NFL with 5 straight wins, and they're at Denver versus Chicago, a bye, and then at Las Vegas after that. This roll, I mean, we saw the Lions at -1100 to win the division last week. I don't know. I'm starting to think the Vikings might have something to say about that. Josh Dobbs, he did it again.
Drugged out dragon.
Can we say that?
Yeah, you just did.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't
it's
know fully
out
what
dragon.
That's
I mean,
fine.
Damn.
It could be legal drugs.
Imagine a dragon on drugs. Holy crap. That'd be scary.
This dragon says, what is the ceiling for the Pastronaut? I like that nickname. The Pastronaut and the Vikings. How far can we go? I mean, what is going on here?
It is unbelievable that a guy who was on another team 3 weeks ago comes in here 2 weeks, gets thrown into the fire last week. And, I mean, today ran the offense like he had been there and been Kirk Cousins' backup for the last four years. Today was domination. 27-19. Okay, that's all nice and well, and you know, some late game heroics from the New Orleans Saints and stats and all that. Game was 27-3 at one point, right? I mean, Dobbs was making play after play with his feet and carving the Saints up in the pass game. I mean, him and TJ Hockenson, it was like they couldn't be stopped today. So they had it all going. And this is where it's sad about the Vikings, and I feel for Kirk Cousins, because we said this a few weeks ago when they were not even on the winning side of 500, right? Where I went, they feel like they're better than last year. You know, I had said that. I said that to Florio. I think when they were sitting there like 2-4, I was like, I think they're better than last year, which is the crazy thing, right? Now they're not turning the ball over. We're seeing the defense every week has a proper game plan, right? It's not a super talented defense, but nobody seems to just go, oh, we're going to move the ball up and down the field on Minnesota and do whatever we want. Brian Flores has certainly had the effect there. They have a guy or two that make a play every game, whether it's Daniil Hunter or you know, Byron Murphy, or it always seems like somebody shows up at the right time here. So I give them a lot of credit. O'Connell is a phenomenal head coach.
I know, and last week I almost just basically anointed Dan Campbell the coach of the year, because I was like, if they can get to the playoffs, it's like, you do that with the Lions, you automatically should get coach of the year. But if he continues to do this with quarterback after quarterback, and your starter goes down, Dobbs comes over, you don't skip a beat, I don't know.
He's going to be a threat. If they end up getting to the playoffs somehow in this formula with the way they are, right, where we went, wait, they're not even a great running football team. So, you know, Kirk Cousins, I know I said, well, it's over for Minnesota. The passing game of Kirk Cousins is what they are, right? So that's where I would be shocked. But, yeah, I think I was just amazed with the ease in which they moved the ball down the field on a solid Saints defense, right? A defense in the Saints that I think is ranked higher than it actually is. It's not as good as its ranking. But I still was surprised by that.
So can we show the dots on a 7-yard touchdown run? If you're watching on Peacock or YouTube here, Next Gen Stats gives us the numbers on it. He ran 45 yards on this 7-yard scramble and score. And we saw this last game, too. Whenever he was in trouble, he would just get out of the pocket and either go with his legs or something would open up in the pass game. Maybe he'd get it to Hockenson there. According to Next Gen Stats, Dobbs has gained 130 rushing yards over expected on scramble runs this season, more than double the next closest quarterback, who is Patrick Mahomes, who's actually very good at doing that. And so he is not only scrambling, but he is getting more yards than an average quarterback should get on these scrambles.
He's sneakier, faster than you think he is. Yeah. I think that's the first thing, right? He's bigger than you think he is. So there's a lot of plays where it's like, oh, people got a hand on him or they're about to drag him down and he gets out of it. Spins out of it, and all of a sudden he's running around the edge for a bunch of yards, right? I think he's got great feel in the pocket or when to get out of town or get out of dodge that way. You know, also, he's the type of guy that he's a good enough runner where you can sprinkle in a few quarterback design runs every game with him. That's what Arizona did too. So that's where he's going to be a handful as we go forward. They're going to be careful in that department because, of course, they don't have much of a quarterback situation with their injuries there. But, yeah, and then, you know, the things that I think ended his time in Arizona, where I remember, you know, a few times I was like, yeah, Dobbs is good, but there's a few throws every game he misses where I go, oh, if he hit those, they might have won the game today, right? He ain't missing those the last 2 weeks. He's been on the money there. So I think that's a little Kevin O'Connell and this talent they got around him and what they're doing there. But, yeah, special. And then, again, you know, we're back to New Orleans, and we talk about that. Again, like, I think the defense is a little overrated, and the offense is simple. It's just too West Coast basic simple. And a guy like Brian Flores, I'm sure, was all over their rules and things they do today. It's, you know, they're in the NFC South. They're going to be in this, but I don't necessarily get excited when I talk about the New Orleans Saints.
They're like a team like you've talked about. It's just like, what's their identity? What are they?
Outside
of Alvin Kamara 3-yard passes.
Exactly.
Down the field.
That's what I mean. Right. And then like, oh, we'll find a moment to where we'll throw a deep pass to Shaheed or Chris Olave.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
I do like Chris
run
Olave.
I know. He made some phenomenal plays today, right?
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, it feels like it's short pass to Kamara, run to Kamara, short pass to Kamara. Maybe that'll develop into a Shaheed bomb or a Olave bomb at some some point, right? But it doesn't feel like it's sustainable, and they might win the South, but I don't know. The Saints just feel like a team that's kind of a, they get in the playoffs, a one-and-done type of football team. And we'll see where it goes. Derek Carr got banged up.
Yeah, that's right. And Jameis Winston came
took
in.
Took a big shot.
I guess it's not too serious, and they have a bye week, I think, coming up. So
shoulder, head, I think he got a little bit of both there.
Jameis didn't look bad in the game, though.
Well, Jameis has got talent. I mean, that Jameis was the scary. I was joking with Florio, who's a Vikings fan. I go, this is the worst thing that could happen to you, because Jameis don't give a damn. He's in a fire. We're down 27-3. He's like, you mean I can just throw it anywhere? And that's what he likes. And, of course, he made some phenomenal plays because of that.
I've never seen a play like the one he threw to A.T. Perry, right? Basically
all the way across the field.
Yeah. A jump ball.
He was like 5 yards from the left sideline. He set up and saw A.T. Perry. It was A.T. Perry, excuse me. All the way in the right corner of the end zone, and he threw it, and Perry made a nice play and went up and got
it. Yeah. You know who does have an identity, though? The Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yes, they do.
Getting outgained by their opponents. It happened again. It happened again. The Packers get 399 yards. The Steelers get 324, and yet they improve to 6-3. They are 6-0 in one possession games this season. They're the only team in the NFL to be outgained in every single game this season. They've got an they've got a formula.
They do.
And it's working. Do not mess
with
it.
We let you get more yards than us, so you feel like you might beat us, and then we close it out at the end of the football game. I thought this was going to be the week that it ended. I did. I didn't think Green Bay would move the ball quite as well as they did on Pittsburgh throughout the day. Whether it was run game, and then, you know, Jordan Love kind of got in a groove in the second quarter, and they made some plays in the pass game as the game went on. They did. Now, they just, you know, them is getting in the end zone. That's another team. They're another team that they make a lot of plays or throws in the middle of the field, but all of a sudden they get to the 20, 25, 30-yard line, and everything stalls out, and they have to kick field goals. That's one of the things that's been going on with them for a little while here. I think the thing the Steelers to look at, you know, we talked about Matt Canada being on the field.
Yep.
You know, second week in a row. I do think their offense looks a little different. I'm not going to say I sit here and go, oh, watch out for them, but, like, there is more consistency. You know, they're running the ball at a much better, you know, yard per carry, everything there, which is much more impressive, and that's how the Steelers want to play.
Ethan McNew, damn okay. Steelers run game coming in hot. 200 yards on the ground. Pittsburgh's getting back to their old school Steelers football, two-headed monster with Najee and Warren. It is the 10th game under Mike Tomlin that they have had 200 or more rushing yards. Now, is that just a versus the Packers thing, or is there something here?
No, I think there's something here. I do. You know, again, 200 yards is a lot, but I think they've found a little bit of groove in running the ball. I do. You know, ran the ball on a Tennessee Titans defense last week that is pretty damn good, defending the run as well, right? So I think there's something there to look at. Offensive line, it looks like it's a little more – they're getting underneath the center a little bit more, letting Najee and Warren come downhill a little bit more. You know, and then they're just sprinkling a few passes from Pickett. Our defense will make a few plays. You know, they're amazing at the Steelers of when they do drive the ball, which, you know, again, they could go three and out, but when they do drive, they always come away with points to a degree. I do feel like if they have four good drives in a game, two of them will end up being a touchdown. And the other thing that they're great at is, yeah, you drive the ball on them, you drive the ball on them, you drive the ball on them, and you don't ever fucking get in the end zone. You kick field goals all the time. That's what they do to everybody, right? You know, and I want to say they're, yeah, I mean, defensively they're 31st in football, but scoring defense, okay, they're 13th in football.
Hmm.
You know, so they're a pain in the ass once you start to get down there close. They don't let you in the end zone.
How are they doing this?
I know, it is.
Throw Mike Tomlin's name in the coach of the year.
Yeah, it deserves to be in there, that's for sure.
AFC North, the Bengals are in last place at 5-4, with Cleveland at 6-3, Pittsburgh at 6-3, Baltimore at 7-3. We do have one question on Christian Watson here.
Yeah.
He had 7 targets but just 2 catches in this game. PFT Ghost says, is it just me or are the Packers not putting Watson in the same spots that made him so deadly the second half of the season last year?
Agreed. And I don't – Watson to me does not look like I question his health.
Mm.
I don't look like he's got – he looks like he has one less rocket up his ass compared to last year.
He's lost a rocket.
Well, and I know he pulled his hamstring early in the year, right? And he had to deal with that. So I do. I wonder if there's something going on there. He's certainly not as explosive, you know. And it does look like they feature Jaden Reed just about as much as anybody. Now, I think, you know, with Watson and Dobbs on the outside – you know, it's beneficial for the slot receiver. He gets some better looks that way. But, yeah, I think there's something there to Watson. I need to take a little deeper look, but it certainly does not look as fast or explosive as I remember him looking last year.
You know what they got to do? The Packers got to move Matt LaFleur up to the booth, because if it's not going well, you just switch it.
You just switch it, and then it all changes just like that.
Which is a good thing with the Steelers, because if it starts going bad again, you just move Canada back up to the booth. You just switch it, and then your problems are solved.
Well, you know, I think with Canada, what the thing you look at, too, is, like, you know, sometimes with a guy like that who's maybe is a good leader, right, and knows how to talk to guys and kind of get the juices flowing and all that, maybe that's what they were missing. And maybe that little bond that he has with the players and the team, and the fact that they got to look him in the face when they make mistakes or whatever else, is just enough to, you know, kind of give him a kick in the ass here to be a better, you know, offensive unit altogether.
We got the Colts in Frankfurt taking on the Patriots. 10-6, low-scoring affair. They didn't see a whole lot of offense.
No, they didn't.
In Frankfurt. They did see, although I don't know if the fans were there when it happened, although they're probably used to it over there. Did you see that, the roof?
Yes.
Oh, it's like an umbrella, and then it just closes?
It's amazing.
What? How, why are they so much smarter than we are?
They've been smarter than us for a long time.
I'm just now learning that.
That
should be in every stadium.
I know. It seems like it's so easy, right? It'd be like, why would you build this big structure when you could just have a fucking umbrella come out over the field?
And then we would have no more rainouts in baseball.
No.
Right? You get rid of all the rainouts.
I know. I don't get it either. You know?
We should steal that.
Yeah. Try to figure that out for me, all right?
Yeah. We should take their technology and just steal it. Peter, are you putting it in right now? Are you putting in the picture or something? Oh, okay. We might come back. It's a tease. If you're watching on Peacock or YouTube, we'll get back to that. But the Colts go. They're 5-5 now. Surpasses their win total from all of last season, where they were 4-12-1. They're just allowing, you know, 9.5 points per game during this 2-game win streak. But I think. Oh, and here it is. Here's the umbrella. If you haven't seen this,
it's awesome.
It is so cool.
It really is.
It's just like, no. It's look at that.
It's
sunny
a beautiful
day. Just a
day. We don't need it. If it gets a little cloudy,
put the
boom,
roof.
We can put it out there
in the scoreboard. Just tuck it into the scoreboard. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a cool stadium. It really is. Cool atmosphere once again today, right?
Yeah.
Same old Patriots. Sucky ducky.
So here's, I think, you know, we'll get to the Colts, right? But for the Patriots, like, this was, like, unusual for me. For the first time in a while, I was like, man, they're kind of floundering. Like, what is that move? Like, I get it. It was a bad interception at the end by Mac Jones, but it seemed very un-Belichick-like to make a move to put in your backup quarterback to win
That's
you the
exactly
game
what
with
I
two
thought.
Minutes left.
Yeah. I just feel like, I don't know if it's, you know, Belichick's ego or whatever. It's just, you know, and I'm saying this in just some of the decisions that have been made over the last few years, whether it's making a special teams and a defensive coordinator, your offensive coordinator, right? That move was really odd to me. Like, when I was sitting there watching the game, I saw Zappe warming up, and I thought, well, he's having a catch with Mac Jones. They're not going to put in Bailey Zappe right now, right?
Yeah.
He's just staying warm in case he's got to go out there. And all of a sudden, he trotted out there, and I was like, what? That seems like the most un-Belichick thing ever. We're going to blame it on one guy now, and we're going to put the game into a guy that what we cut from the football team twice this year, and he wasn't even a backup for a few games, and now you're going to ask him to come in the game and save the game? It just, like I kind of said in Football Night in America, Belichick's always been like, stay the course, we're on to Cincinnati, no. And now to make it all about Mac Jones, listen, Mac Jones, that interception was fucking pitiful. I get it. That was horrible. He didn't really have that much pressure. He threw it like he was about to be hit, and it was like, no, the guy's still 4 yards from you. And he threw it off his back foot and threw the ball, what, 15 yards short to a wide-open receiver?
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to score a touchdown. So, you know, I understand that, but it almost feels like frustration got the best of Belichick and Billy O'Brien there. This was a game today that the Patriots could have had. They should have had. They outplayed the Colts for the most part of the day. To me, the big part was whether it was Mac Jones, you know, interceptions like that, or the handful of times that Gardner Minshew made some incredible plays to extend drives and keep it going a little bit. That was really the difference in the football game when it all came down to it. You know, but yeah, even the Patriots get down there close one time. They get into like maybe the 7-8 yard line. They can't punch it in. They got to kick a field goal, know, it was a day where it was there to be had. And it felt like they outplayed the Colts. It's just the Colts made the bigger plays and the bigger moments, and you know that put them on top out in Frankfurt.
Dio Odengbo had three sacks. He just had three sacks in the first nine games this season. But I am Sammy Lambert's a little concerned. He goes, Shaq Leonard begs for more playing time.
Yeah.
He looks like a statue.
He is a statue.
Is that him or Gus Bradley's doing?
Oh.
EJ Speed looks like the better option. That huge contract and disgruntledness doesn't seem like he will be on the Colts much longer.
Well, Pete will tell you this. Matt Casey, who's sitting here with us, I was talking about this at the end of the game in the NBC viewing room, right? Shaq Leonard's not the same guy. He's not the same guy. He is not as good as EJ Speed or Zaire Franklin. He is not. It's not even close, right? He's 215 pounds, and he had a serious back injury last year, right? He's not as explosive, and he does not seem as physical or kamikaze as he once was, okay? And those other two guys are players. They are. And they're bigger than he is, they're faster than he is, and they're more physical than he is right now. So I know Darius Leonard last week came out in the press and said all these things. I don't understand why I'm not playing more, and I wish they would just tell me. Come on. Don't start all that. You know what's going on. You're watching the games. Everybody else is watching the games. He is not as good as those two. So, yeah, hopefully this is just a one-year thing here with him, and he's just kind of getting his feet back underneath him here after a year of, you know, being injured and banged up. But I'm a little worried. You know, again, I always worry about that smaller type of guy who hits like he's like Ray Lewis. But it's like, no, you're really like a safety, and you're playing middle linebacker. And you worry about those kind of guys, their bodies wearing out. Usually they wear out in a hurry. And I do worry about that with Shaq Leonard.
Yeah. It worked today, whatever they did, but that was mainly, you know, because of what the Patriots didn't do maybe on the offensive side.
Yeah,
but still,
I think that's fair to say.
Some credit to the Colts. One more game to talk about, the Buccaneers. The last game in our Don't Look Now segment, because Don't Look Now, they're 4-5, and no team gets into the playoffs better with a losing record than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So Don't Look Now, they are just a half game back in the NFC South. That did snap a four-game losing streak. Baker Mayfield, his last three games now, six touchdowns, one interception. Excuse me, I'm fading as we go into the sunset here. They just gave Tennessee problems on offense the entire game.
The whole day. Like, right? Levis never seemed like he was even remotely as close to comfortable as he was against Pittsburgh or, you know, the week before that when he threw the four touchdown passes. And nothing was easy. And he had people around him. He was getting hit as he threw. He looked like he was confused by coverages and holding the ball a little too long, or had a few throws where you're like, oh, that was dicey there. Like, there's a few people there that could have been intercepted. You were lucky, right? They never seemed in sync the whole day. And then, of course, couldn't get the run game going either. And that's what they would like to do with Will Levis at quarterback and lack of big-time, you know, firepower at receiver. They need some semblance of a run game. Kind of an ugly football game that basically came down to Bucs defense played better and Baker made some big time throws in the pass game. I think that's all there is to it. You know, really. I mean, Mike Evans was damn good. A little splash of Chris Godwin in there, and that's all it took. You know, Evans, big touchdown pass.
Rashad White turned
Rashad
down the Jets
Weiss,
one time.
That big play down the sideline, right? That was certainly huge, too. That was the little, like, dump off to the left. I don't know if it was a screen or if
it was a screen,
right? Yeah, so that was good to see. It's good to see. They can be dangerous. You know, when their defense is healthy in Tampa, they got some guys that can make some plays, whether it's Winfield. I like Carlton Davis. Vita Vea, to me, is the best player in their defense. When he's out there, they're a totally different defense. And then offensively, I don't love their offense, but Baker's got a big arm. Mike Evans is still dangerous. Chris Godwin's still damn good. And if they can run the ball a little with White, who's got some talent, yeah, they're going to be a pain in the ass here. I still think they're a team that can challenge to win the NFC South for sure. In fact, I see things about them that I like more than the leading New Orleans Saints a lot of the time.
And more than Atlanta.
And more than Atlanta as well. Now, you know, it's just, you know, they've hit these moments of being inept on offense. And that's what you hope to kind of get out of their system here as we go along. But really, they could have won this game by more than 20-6. You know, Mike Evans dropped a touchdown pass. They had to settle for a field goal after the ball hit him in the face in the end zone, and he dropped it. But Baker looked good today, looked comfortable.
For Tennessee, it's their worst start since 2015. This is not going to be it for Tennessee this year. It's going to be the development year for Will Levis.
This is all in about next year. Figure him out, Right.
Tajay Spears, running back,
you got him.
They need weapons on offense.
And formulate what you're going to do in free agency in the draft. And you start to get ready to that to frame the team around Will Levis.
All right. We don't want to forget. Actually, maybe we do want to forget what happened on Thursday night. We normally do Thursday night in 60 seconds. We might not need 60 seconds this time. The Bears did defeat the Panthers 16-13. What's your big takeaway from that game? Did you watch it?
Oh, of course. I don't ever miss a standalone football game, ever. Yeah.
Did you rewatch it, though?
No, I did not rewatch it. I did not. You know, Bears run the football, manage the game on the right side with their rookie quarterback in Bajent. The one thing I like about with the Bears on defense is they play a ton of man. They don't let you have anything easy. They know they don't have, like, the best pass rush in football, even though it's gotten better with Montez Sweat and company there. Right, so they try to confuse you up front and at the line of scrimmage, and now they got Montez Sweat. They're capable of maybe collapsing the pocket a little better than they ever have been. Good win for them. I think the story of the game still, for me, is that the number one pick does not look very number one pick-ish, right? And I'm not sitting here trying to bag on anybody, right? But to me, the biggest part in a boring game where you're talking about is a quarterback that, you know, again, I know is slick and kicked the ball out of his hands quick and all that, but misses way too many throws when the pockets are clean. There's too many wobblers. There's too many balls that hang in the air. And for as quick as releases are and how he can see the field, it's just the opposite on the down-the-field throws. He loses time in the pocket because he cannot stand in there and make throws when the pocket's collapsing. Just like, I don't know if you saw the end of the game. He had an out route. I want to say it was to Hayden Hurst right before the fourth down. It might have been second down. And the pocket was collapsing. And, you know, because of his size, and now he has to, like, raise his arm to get it over the people, he's not able to get enough accuracy and mustard on the ball to get it there. And that's what I worry about him going forward. I still question, are they going to be a run and then run play action and boots off of him, or are they going to spread it out and let him wheel and deal? That's the thing I'm not sure. They kind of dabble in both. I think they're trying to figure it out. And, again, I want to give him the benefit of – I know he doesn't have great talent around him. I get that. It's just I'm going by the look test there, right? Good win for the Bears. I just go, you know, the number one pick does not even look in the same planet as the number two pick, right? I think that's the big thing. Not even the same planet. And I think that's what's a little scary.
And the fact that he doesn't have talent around him is partly their own fault, because he just looks over on the other sideline and sees DJ Moore.
Wait, we had that guy?
I could have played with that guy.
That's the other tough spot when a team goes all in on you. You know, not only is the pressure, you're the number one pick. Whoa, you traded all these assets for this guy. And then you go, yeah, you traded all these assets too. And now you want him to carry the team, and you give him nothing to help him out. And we'll see where they're going to go this year, because they got no first and second round pick in this draft because the Bears got it.
Where we're going to go is
home
after we talk about Monday Night Football, Broncos at Bills. Go.
I think this could be interesting. I do. I mean, I'm going to take the Bills to win the football game. Okay. I am.
You think the Broncos are catching some momentum?
I do. I think the Broncos have found their groove on the defensive side of the ball, and for a Bills offense that we know is not consistently dangerous on a week-to-week basis, I could see them slowing them down. And I could see Sean Payton and Russell Wilson having a good little game plan here to make this interesting. I'm going with the Bills to win the football game. Okay. Let me see what I picked a 24-20. So I'm expecting the Broncos to hang around and make this thing interesting.
So the Bills are favored by 7, so you have the Broncos
coming
off a bye.
Yeah, coming off a bye. Sean Payton specials. They've shown they've been able to run the ball a little bit better as of late. Russell's getting more comfortable. Yeah, I think they're going to make this a little too uncomfortable for the Bills in this one.
We've done it again.
Yes, we did.
We've reached the part of the podcast where usually Matt Casey gives us his laptop with breaking news, but apparently there's no.
He's heartbroken because his Jets lost, so he doesn't even care about the breaking news. He's like, shut up, let's move on with the night.
Yeah. Are we still following this NFL thing?
All right, everybody, you know where to find us. Wednesday we'll be back. Me and Ahmed Fareed for the Treasure Hunters, a.k.a. What the Fuck Happened podcast. I appreciate everybody listening. Week 10 podcast recap. NFL season's unbelievable. It never ceased to never disappoints, right? On a week to week basis. It really doesn't. It's amazing. It's great theatrics. Keep sending them the questions, thoughts. You know it. I love to hear your thoughts. Challenge me, question me, or ask me to expand on anything. Send in some tweets on who you want me to watch on film on Wednesday. I'm going to get after that tomorrow. I usually listen to my group here and they point me in the right direction, but be good, homies. Enjoy Monday Night Football. We'll talk to you Wednesday. Amen. Thanks for everything. You the man. Clap it up.
Clap it up.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.